This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, so Jeff Passan is using the word that the players are bristling at taking further pay cuts. And that's what the new proposal has, every player in the league taking at least some sort of a pay cut, with the highest paid players taking the biggest. We'll get into more details on that coming up. We'll play you what Passan said earlier this morning, that this is the biggest week regarding negotiations in a quarter of a century for Major League Baseball. But let's get to some good, because it was a fantastic event on Sunday on TNT. Brian Anderson had the play-by-play, and our buddy Charles Barkley was on the call. There were so many other people helping in on that. Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson.
Just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, almost 6 million people watched this, Waddle. It was the largest golf audience on cable ever. And Brian Anderson joins Waddle and Sylvie right now on ESPN 1000. Brian, how are you feeling? How was your weekend?
Oh, everything was good, man. I'm glad that's in the rearview mirror, and we were able to fight through the rains and accomplish our goal, which was to, in the middle of all the heaviness that's going on, be able to entertain a little bit and bring live sports back. It was a great test run for us to try
Brian,
to see how all the everything was going to work out. But it was all good, man. I'm feeling good.
Brian, you mentioned the weather. Was there ever a point where you guys thought that maybe this thing wasn't going to happen because the weather wasn't going to cooperate?
You know, in the golf world, you're always concerned about weather, but we got notifications pretty early on that there was no electricity up in the sky, so no lightning. And then it means just playing through the rain. It was warm. The rain was significant, but I apologize for the wind. I'm outside right now. But I think it was going to be a good day. The players were into it. I give Peyton Manning a lot of credit. He kind of led the charge on that. He came in with just a great attitude and, you know, we're going to get wet today, boys. Let's have some fun. Let's raise some money. So I think once he kind of set the tone there, everybody was good to go. I give those guys a lot of credit for grinding it out. And I give our crew just a ton of credit for toughing it out, working through all the technical challenges. I mean, we got a lot of RF equipment out there, man, that we're trying to make work. And it's hard to make work on a dry day, much less a rainy day. So it was a triumph. Probably a bit of a miracle we were able to pull it off, but I think we just needed to try to put on as much as we could, and we were able to do that.
Yep.
Brian Anderson does lots of national TV, also the voice of the Brewers. And in your career, Brian, was that the most unique thing you've ever done play-by-play for?
Well, on that scale, for sure. I worked at Golf Channel prior to my time with the Brewers, and we did a lot of made-for-TV events. We would typically do four or five a year, and players mic'd up a whole bit. I remember doing one with John Daly and 13-year-old Michelle Wee and Natalie Gulbis and Hank Keeney. That was kind of the one that always stuck in my mind. It was such a dynamic of personalities there, and Michelle Wee being this 13-year-old phenom prodigy. It's comfortable for me to do that. Now, this is a different scale, obviously, different personalities, but similar format, you know. You're just trying to get out of the way and make sure you shut up when they start talking. The two elements that we added was, number one, the cart cams. Number one, they were in carts, but to add the cart cams gave everybody a whole new perspective. We used the NASCAR camera rigs to get inside the carts, and we did that because we wanted to have these confessional moments with the players where they'd have an earpiece in, and we'd be able to talk to them. So then we added the card cams, the earpieces, so that made it a little more interactive, and for the most part, it all worked. So in that regard, it was unique, certainly different than a regular game or a regular golf event, but it was actually really fun, and I didn't have to say, you know, half as much as I normally would, probably two-thirds as much as I normally would, because those guys, Brady and Manning, the quarterbacks, and then Tiger and Phil were just carrying so much of the content with their commentary. It was a beautiful thing.
Brian, the access that the fans at home got was fantastic. But obviously you explained that, you know, this is an exhibition, raised a ton of money, but an exhibition. If you kind of, we've seen it a little bit in preseason baseball games and spring training. Can you envision a scenario, especially for a sport like baseball that is looking to appeal to a younger audience, where something similar is implemented, where maybe you can do a player that has a microphone on over the course of a game and, you know, throughout the year, or maybe even in golf on a Saturday? Would guys be receptive to this going forward?
Well, speaking of golf specifically, I think what we were able to do hopefully will show not only the leagues, the tour in this case, but the different leagues that they can trust us with this. And there's going to be, I mean, there's going to be profanities, and we have the ability to go on a 10-second delay like we did this event. So, I mean, Tom Brady was swearing all over the place, and that's fine. I think people are they're okay with that. But obviously, if you have kids around, that's not gonna fly for a general event and a general audience. So we got to be able to cover that. You know, one thing we were doing at Golf Channel back in the day is we were putting mics on players back. We had the rights to the Canadian tour back then, and we kind of had this blank palette to work with. And we would put mics on players, and we would ask them to talk us through shots. And very similar to what Phil did with that pitch on two, that little chip shot he hit. So that's realistic. Now, the earpieces in the ears, I don't think that's necessarily realistic yet, but our technology's getting better. The equipment's getting smaller. And I think that they could come. I think what's more realistic is that we set up confessional stations when you have backups on certain holes, which in golf, we kind of know where the backups are going to be. Most of the par five tee boxes, there's going to be a wait because guys are waiting to go for it. And you can set up these little confessional boxes where they can go in, put a headset on. We can have a mid-round conversation with these guys, whoever wants to. And we'll take whoever wants to jump in there. So that's starting to become, for me, that's my idea to make this more realistic. You know, with baseball players, set up an area where we can have a conversation inside the dugout. Or, you know, we do in-game interviews, but they're all just so tightly scripted, and certain things are, you know, you can't ask and certain things you can't. I'd like to be a little more of a free-flowing, mic'd-up scenario. We can get our stars to wear the microphones and they'll trust us.
Right.
Then we're all better, not just a young audience. Everybody wants to dive in more to the game and have a more intimate experience with what we're watching. And, you know, we can do that, even if we have to create a secondary channel that allows those, and we can cut those up. Because you think about what Monday night, or not necessarily Monday Night Football, but what the NFL, what really supported the NFL in their growth years was NFL Films. And what did NFL Films bring you that the telecast didn't? All of those inside mic'd up moments that were just so cool. Hearing Hank Schramm and all those guys, like, those are iconic sound bites now. If they don't allow us to put microphones on them, we never get those. So I hope this continues to push the envelope forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. Brian Anderson is joining us from Turner Sports. He had the play-by-play of the match with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. I want to ask you, as a guy who does national and local, and you'll be doing baseball here when baseball does return, do you feel the need that there needs to be this fake crowd underneath? Because I don't, I'm cool. I understand what the situation is as a fan and someone in this business. How do you feel about putting in fake noise under your broadcasts?
I don't have such an opinion on that yet. I'd like to hear it. I mean, I've done a lot of games in front of no fans. I spent 9 years calling minor league baseball. It's not that big of an issue for me. I think the players, the energy of the players is what maybe is at stake here. I'm actually okay with no crowd noise. And I'll tell you why. And we learned a lot this weekend at the match. By having no spectators, it does create a more intimate experience. These guys they know they're being watched by millions of people, but while they're out there, it just feels like they're by themselves and then a few cameras. And I think you can get that. And what I think would happen with that kind of setting is you would get a lot more sound. You, from a television perspective, you know, like when we go do games in Miami, there aren't many people there. And you can hear a lot more. Christian Yelich fractured his kneecap in Miami last year. And I remember, like, hearing the whole conversation about his kneecap and athletic trainer. And, like, we wouldn't have been able to hear that in a regular setting, but there was hardly anybody in the stands at Marlins Park. So you could hear that. So I do think you would be able to get a lot more audio. Now, players may not want to do – that's probably why the sound idea is coming up, because players want to be covered that way. But, again, more access, being able to hear it, being able to hear their commentary. If we put microphones in the bases – with no crowd, you're going to be able to hear all that, and I think that's great. I mean, that becomes a real entertainment product and something new that, beside the game will be fine, but something beside the game that'll attract people who aren't necessarily going to sit there and watch nine innings.
Brian, are you confident that the Major League Baseball season will get underway sooner rather than later?
I can't say confident. I think the plan to play, I'm confident in the plan and that they'll work out an agreement. I just don't know about the virus and what happens if players test positive. What happens if the Chicago Cubs have Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo test positive? I mean, they're together all the time. What if they're both positive and now they're down for 3 weeks in quarantine? And what does that do to the Cubs? And for me, it's still really complicated. I hate to kind of pour water on all this, but it's just still a really complicated scenario on how you go about fielding a team and staying together. I think golf's the first sport back, and there's golf probably the simplest sport to get back. Baseball's probably next because of the open air and the space between the players. I think basketball and football are going to have a really difficult time coming back. Hockey too. So I think everybody's on the same page. Everybody wants to be back and play. All the players, the broadcasters, the owners, you know, I think that's, they're going to work out all these differences. A lot of that is just smoke coming from negotiations. So I'm not too concerned about like the bickering back and forth, but I am concerned about if, you know, the virus and the health of these players and their families and everybody involved in it. So it's not just a matter of like owners being selfish and players being more selfish. That's a simple narrative that I've been hearing. That's not true. It's way more than that. I mean, it's way more than that, trust me. So that's what I'm concerned most about, is what happens if there's a positive test and what the protocols are at that point.
Brian, you guys did a great job over the weekend. It was great to have you on our show, and all the best.
Thank you, Brian.
Of course. Thank you. Appreciate it.
There you go. Brian Anderson, Turner Sports. He had the play-by-play of the match. He's also the voice of the Brewers. He does like a lot of other – he's done NCAA tournament. Yeah. Everything like that. At the end there, and that's what I want to ask you, Waddle, he still poo-poos the bickering with baseball, because, and we're right in the middle of that right now. And then the latest proposal has been given to the players. The players are not happy. We're getting fans arguing with other fans again. One side is so anti-players that they're millionaires. They should be happy that they're getting anything to play a game. And everything like that. And I want to play what Jeff Passan had to say on how big of a moment this is for baseball. That if they are able to play because the health is there, if they screw this up financially, what it would mean. I'll play that for that coming up next.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
All right, talking about back to sports, a lot going on today. The NHL came out with their plan, and then we also had the baseball bickering going on with the bristle is the word that Jeff Passan's using. I want to play you what Jeff Passan said this morning on Get Up and then get your thoughts on this, Waddle. But Brian Anderson, who does the Brewers, isn't concerned about the bickering. He just thinks it's smoke at this point. Here's Jeff Passan from Get Up.
I try not to be a prisoner of the moment, but I believe this is going to be the most consequential week in Major League Baseball in the last quarter century, dating back to the 1994 strike. You know, we had 2002 where there was a question if there was going to be a strike, but ultimately there was not. Now the Major League Baseball season hangs in the balance, and it's going to come down to MLB and the Players Association figuring out how to split the revenue that they generate in 2020. And that is not going to be an easy thing to do. But as we have said on this show, on SportsCenter, everywhere for 2 months now, this is the moment where it gets important. And we're going to see if these two sides that have been at loggerheads for a long time now can come together and bring baseball back in 2020.
You told me 2 weeks ago, sitting in these very seats, that things were going to get ugly. Do you expect it to get ugly this week?
I don't know that it's going to be pretty necessarily, but what I think is going to happen is we're going to have a good back and forth, and that back and forth ultimately is going to lead the sides to a point where they can play baseball. Let's remember, Greeny, the NBA is coming back, it looks like. The NHL is coming back, it looks like. Major League Baseball is the summer sport, and to lose those months to those other leagues would just be catastrophic long-term for the league, and I think they recognize that.
So there you go from Jeff Passan. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is negotiations. Negotiations are never pretty, are they? I mean, when was the last time a negotiation felt like it went swimmingly or people didn't get pissed? I mean,
should negotiations, though, be this ugly and this public during a pandemic? That's the question. Is there a way to do it with people losing jobs, with people losing lives, and billionaires arguing with millionaires?
I think it's gotten relatively nasty. I mean, look, it hasn't gotten really nasty yet. It's just they're on different. Like the Players Association said, no way. You know, it's non-starter. 50%, 50-50 revenue split. That's a non-starter because that's a form of a salary cap. I haven't seen a lot of nastiness, to be honest with you. I'm sure there's some heated conversations going on now. But look, they've got to – these are two separate issues. I mean, yeah, you have to worry about the public appearance. But by the same token, you also have to go about your business. Like, we want normalcy? Well, when players and owners bicker, this is what it looks like. That's normal. So – like, I'm not worried about them doing this irreparable harm to the sport. I think that that's a good talking point, but if you're a baseball fan, you're going to watch. You're going to watch. If you're a fringe baseball fan, probably you're still going to watch because you haven't had any sports for a couple of months. But these are the same conversations we've had about owners and players for eons.
Well, and they both believe they're still going to play. John Heyman just tweeted, while union may not love MLB's first proposal, it's important to note that this is simply that, a first offer. While there isn't a ton of time, MLB is hoping to begin spring training about June 10th. That's in 2 weeks.
Right. It's the opposite of the NHL plan. The NHL is like, hey, we're thinking about coming back to training camp at the end of July and playing in August. The MLB wants to get all this negotiation done and being in camp in 2 weeks.
Well, let it be farther apart negotiating-wise, but guys, 2 weeks. Come on, let's get this.
See, there are a couple of things. I caught the Tom Ricketts interview on CNBC about halfway through or maybe on the back end of it, but there were a couple of points that Tom Ricketts made that I will share with you. The person interviewing him said, what was your best guess getting back to work? He said July 4th is not out of the question. Starting the season, July 4th is not out of the question. He also referenced baseball being different from a financial perspective because they haven't started their season just yet. The NBA and the NHL, their seasons are well beyond the halfway point. There's been a lot of revenue that's been banked already. And his other point was is it's their preference, and I think this probably goes without saying, but they want to play in their own parks. So those were the three kind of the bullet point messages I got from watching Tom Ricketts talk on CNBC. Look, this is the other element here that we've talked about in the past is the collective bargaining agreement is up at the end of the season. Now, if you're the players and you want to stick it to the owners now, they're going to stick it to you in the next negotiation. And I know what you're going to say before you even say it. So let me predict. The owner's going to stick it to him anyway.
They're always, yeah.
But dude, this is reality. There's nowhere else for these players to go. It's a monopoly. They can't shop themselves elsewhere. So there is a certain amount of you're beholden to the owners to begin with. They can make your life even more miserable if, for whatever reason, the perception is they stuck it to you. Or the other way is they can just say, you know what, the best thing for us financially is to not have a season.
The side, though, from the players, Waddle, is not that, hey, we're looking to stick it to anybody. The fact is that they sign contracts for a year for X amount of money. Let's say I'm a player. Let's say I make $20 million for the 2020 season. My contract says I get $20 million to play this year. It isn't dependent on games. So even if you play half the games, my contract shouldn't be void for half the year. If I go down with an injury in game one, I am still owed the entire of my career. So they're already saying we have consented to the agreement of taking half of our salary. Now, if we're some of the richer players, you want to cut our salary up to another 30%. So you want to give us a fraction of what we're supposed to be owed. And everyone's going to say, I've read my timeline already. Oh, you're the player. You're only making $60,000 per game to play. Why is it on the player and not the billionaires who are going to make money regardless in the long term and took on the risks to begin with?
Smarter than that. You know the answer.
No,
they have
I'm
all
not.
The power. They have all the power.
I understand they have the power. So they should be able to take the power and use the risk in bad times as well.
Right.
It isn't the player's fault that they say we want to draw the line somewhere.
I'm not blaming them, but that's not reality. That's not reality. Guess who's going to pay on the other end of it? As I said last week, you're not paying $8 for a hot dog anymore. You're paying $12. You're going to get stung for it regardless. My point, and the other thing is
that's why I caution the fan to say who sides with the owner. Oh, it's on the players. It's on the players. These owners stick it to you, whether in good times or bad times. Your seats go up if the Cubs are 500. Your seats go up if the Cubs win the World Series. Your beers go up if the Cubs are below 500.
Yep.
And guess what's going to happen after a pandemic? They're going to stick it to you, but yet you're ripping the players and you're taking the owner's side.
Here's I'm just reading John Heyman's tweets. Here's another one. So exact percentages in MLB proposal aren't known, but people involved estimate the best paid stars, so Trout, Cole, Verlander, Scherzer, etc., might make 20 to 30% of their full salary over 82 games plus a postseason. So for Cole, for instance, he's not going to make $36 million. He's going to make $9 million. Yes, it's still $9 million, but you're asking people to take an 80% pay cut.
Who's doing that today? Who's doing that in today?
I don't know. I mean, so I mean, let's
like
go
people
back.
People are saying, well, everyone's taking pay cuts in the real world. No one is.
Well, how about 100% pay cut? How's that feel?
But baseball's not doing that, Waddle.
They could.
This isn't your local restaurant that is in real life danger of ever existing again. These are billionaires whose cost of their franchise is only going to go up.
Listen, I love your passion and I love your purpose. I'm just telling you, the real world sees in the real world, it's different. Like I've already told you that the optimal perspective for me is deferred salaries. You get what you signed for, but you get it over a period of time. That's
This isn't close to that.
Of course, it's not. I'm not arguing that the player that the owners are correct here, but I'm telling you that they hold the majority of the power. And you as a fan have the capacity to make a decision with all of this as an understanding. If you don't want to support your local team or the sport because of how the owners have acted, I think that is a fantastic stance for you. But this is reality.
We need them more than ever now. That's the fact. We as fans want them and need them more than ever. And they, I would hope, would view this opportunity with everything going on as being saviors as well. And not threatening to take our bat and ball and going home.
That's fine, but it's not their civic duty to make you feel better. This is reality. Like, you and I are having two separate conversations. Because I agree with you. But standing in the market, you know, in the middle of the marketplace and yelling what should be is really a separate conversation than what it's going to take to get to some sort of resolution here.
But by looking at your cash flow for a year, Waddle, you're not looking at the big picture of growth. You're going to only hurt your sport. I'm not saying it's a civic duty. I'm saying anybody who wants to invest in their sport, if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, if you're Tom Ricketts, shouldn't you be looking at the big picture and knowing how much damage you're going to do your sport by going away because it's, quote, easier to not operate?
But you just told lose. But wait a second. You just told me that 3 years from now, these franchises are going to escalate in value.
Yes.
So what's their, well, you, but which
not
is
if you
it?
Go away, not as well as if you go away. If you take the loss today and you deal with it and you let everything come back to normal, in 5 years, the big picture will continue to be what it's always been.
So that's what they're saying to you. That's one of their
options. You don't believe you will be doing irreparable harm if you leave now?
No, I don't.
You don't. If baseball folds up and says, you know what, screw it, we're better off not operating.
No, because they can hide behind the excuse, for a lack of a better term, that it wasn't safe. You know what, it didn't work.
But I'm not saying that. That's not the excuse. The excuse is the greedy players won't take what we're giving them, so you know what, it's cheaper for us to just not even operate as a team. We're folding up and we're not operating.
So you're telling me 5 years from now that the financial status of Major League Baseball is going to be irreparably harmed?
I say the sport will be harmed, yes. If you go away, if you fold up shop, you know how long it took baseball to come back after the strike of 95?
You've already just said it, though. Your timeline is filled with people that are pissed at the players.
And I think that's wrong.
I know you think it's wrong, but they're still pissed at the players.
312-332-3776. What do you think? We'll also get you caught up on Waddle's World. It's a passionate debate regarding this stuff.
It's, you and I aren't even debating. We're talking about what should happen and what will happen. That's what the debate is.
Okay, that's coming up next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Talking about the baseball negotiations, phone number to reach us, 312-332-3776.
So how does this get resolved? If you had to put your money down, bet with your money, the ultimate
players will take some sort of another pay cut. It will not be deferred money.
Why do you think?
Because the owners have the power, like you have said. But I hope it won't be to this extent.
Now, I'm critical of the entire situation. But to me, the most equitable response to all of this, for the reasons you've mentioned and the reasons we've all mentioned, is that 5 years down the line, where we are expecting things to get back to normal.
Right.
So the value of a Major League Baseball franchise should, with a blip, it's like a chart of the Dow. Like,
right.
You know, if you go back and you look at the Dow over the last 100 years and you look at the chart of the Dow, you can't even discern where the stock market has crashed at times. You know why?
Because it always goes up.
Because if you spread out the length of time and you start from the start and you go to the end point, it looks basically like a 45-degree angle.
Right.
So I agree with you. 5 years from now, while like your billion-dollar asset next year may be worth $750 million, 5 years out, it's going to be worth $1.6 billion again. So to me, that's why the equitable response here is to issue a deferred compensation package where everyone does get their money, but you give the owners some cash flow flexibility. But at the end of the day, whether it's 18 months or 2 years or 12 months, you make your players whole. And if the owners don't do that, shame on them. But the point is they can, because they are wielding the big sword.
Right. I just want to know from people, is why they put it on the players. Why is it up to the players to make it right? So the owners have they always say, we're never going to share our profits because we're the one fielding the team and we're the one taking the risk. So in years where they make 11 or 12 billion and they cut that up into profits and they split it amongst the teams, the players don't see it. They see their salary. Guys, you don't get what we're making. We're taking the risk. That's why we pay you a salary. When times get bad, now it's time to dig into the player's salary. But what about the risk now? Why doesn't the same risk thing go into effect where, look, you guys are the ones taking the risk when times are good. Why is it not up to you guys to make it right when times are down?
Because the average guy can't muster up the emotion to be pissed at the owners for a player whose average salary is $4.5 million. Right, wrong, or indifferent. It's hard to muster up an emotion for a scenario where the guy who's taking it on the chin, the average salary is $4.5 million a year. That's just the reality. That what's-his-face Chatwood can come in and make $35 million for 3 years and have an ERA of 6. Now, that's Theo's fault for signing that contract. But they can't negotiate that contract backwards when Chatwood stinks. And the fan of the Cubs is like, Chatwood, you make $12 million a year. You're awful. I got no sympathy for you when the owners come in and tell you that I want to cut your salary. I mean, so the players are always going to be on the short end of the stick because the owners have all the power. And the players can't shop their services elsewhere because there's no competition. It sucks, but the suck part of it is, the downside is the average player's salary is $4.5 million a year. That's the economics of it.
Patrick's in Crete. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, what's going on? Sylvie, I agree with you 100%. I'm definitely on your side, but I try to look at the other side of things too. Truthfully, I really do believe the reason why fans are on the players about all this is because when you go to a game and you buy a jersey, does it say Reinsdorf on the back?
Right.
Does it say Ricketts on the back? When you go down to the field, you and your son, when you take him to a game, is he looking for a Ricketts autograph? No. You know what I mean? Like, trust me, it's the billionaires that should have to give up, you know, or take the loss on this. But in my opinion, the way I see it on the other side too is it's the players that we cheer for. It's the players that kind of get our mind off of everything when when they hit a big home run, and you know, as you're growing up as a kid, you have a favorite player. You don't have a favorite owner. So you're kind of just greedy in the aspect of you just want to see that player. You want to keep watching that player. You know what I'm saying? That's just my take on it, guys. I'll hang up and I'll listen. Thanks.
And then you're saying to Mike Trout, you're saying, look, I understand that we're cutting your salary by 75%, but you go out and you risk, you know, spreading the virus, catching the virus, being exposed, spreading it to your grandparents, your parents, whoever. And you're taking the risk, but be cool with it. I don't think that's
well, everyone
fair.
That's going back to work is also taking the same risk. I mean, like if you're going to your workplace, you're taking a risk as well. I mean, the people that are in the supply chain, everyone out there, that's part of all of getting back to work is there's going to be a certain amount of risk that's
right.
Taken.
Yeah, and they should be compensated for it.
Absolutely. So we'll see if that's what the owners decide to do. But like I said, if you're pissed off at the owners for their behavior over the course of this, you have the means to express your displeasure. Everybody does.
Michael in Bolingbrook, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Michael.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Good, good. You know, I actually wanted to just push back on what you said earlier, Sylvie, a little bit about how the owners would stick it to the fans over time by raising the prices periodically. I don't view it like that. And I think I certainly don't feel like this is a sides argument as much as it's in the best interest of the league for the owners to do what's in the best interest of the league. Like, for example, baseball players don't know how to run professional sports leagues. They know how to play baseball. And so when the owners get together and they say, hey, listen, we've been doing this for hundreds of years and we think we can manage this storm, I tend to rely on their expertise in the area and just hope that baseball continues, you know, because there's no guarantee that we get baseball for the rest of my life, you know.
All I'm saying, Michael, is, you know, everyone says, well, the owners. When is the owners ever, like Waddle said, well, you know who's going to pay on the other side? It's the fan.
Yeah.
When hasn't the fan paid on the other side?
They always
when,
do.
When have they,
well,
when,
I like,
when has there ever
like
been a time,
it,
Michael,
though.
where a team will come to you and say, you know what, this year, guys, we're going to cut our prices by 25% because we suck?
Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, things that are awesome, and going to Wrigley Field is awesome. I love it. It's like one of the most, you know, it's a jungle of concrete, and then you just step foot into this lime green heaven. It's so cool. And the opportunity to pay to experience that, you know, I couldn't make that. I couldn't make that in 40 years, you know? So, I don't know.
Listen, think about football players. Like, you don't have a guaranteed contract.
They have it the worst, for sure.
Like Chatwood is collecting guaranteed cash, although he's not living up to the deal. You could argue that about everybody. Like, they cut your ass in football.
Well, what's going to happen, Waddle, in football? I mean, they haven't even talked. What if fans aren't there? Are they going to ask them to take pay cuts? How's that going to weigh in with Khalil Mack?
It's not going to go over well. Like I said, to me, this is a really simple solution, common sense-wise. It's deferred compensation. Whatever your contract says you're supposed to get, okay, you're going to get it. But in the meantime, we have to come to an agreement to give us some cash flow flexibility, and we'll make you good on the other side. Like, I don't understand why that's not something that I do understand, because owners have all the power. It's the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying. It's not right, but it's they've created the market, and you've got nowhere else to shop your services. You could go overseas and play, you know, but are you going to make the kind of money that you make here? And should you have it's the unfortunate, you know, reality of them having a basic monopoly.
So someone tweeted Jesse and said, it sure doesn't sound like there's going to be a season with what's going on. And Jesse responded, I'll tell you what he said if he's as down on the way things are going next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie. And at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I want to tell you what Jesse said about the negativity going around baseball. But first, the 4 o'clock hour of Waddle and Sylvie is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. Most lenders have tightened up their guidelines, but not at the Home Loan Expert.
No negativity there.
No, they're originating loans, saving our clients hundreds, if not thousands, dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Ryan Kelly is one of the most positive guys I know, actually. He's going to work for you.
Self-made guy.
Self-made guy. You'll not meet a guy with more energy, and he's available for you 7 days a week. So check him out today. So somebody, Andy Rowe, tweeted us, including Jesse, and wrote, kiss the season goodbye, you know, with all this talk about, you know, first of all, like Brian Anderson said, there is still a huge risk. We can get all this solved and then go back, and then sure enough, we could get a bunch of players exposed, and this is all for naught, and we won't be able to play because of health.
This is all going to work out. They're going to come to an agreement. Now, you may not approve of how it comes to be, but I would bet a good amount of money that they will come to some sort of agreement.
Well, right. So he's thinking kiss the season goodbye. There's all this health risk, and then now the negativity of over the money. And Jesse responded, not at all. They'll get there.
Yeah.
So I think that's how passing just what you phrased, Waddle, that most people think that this is, it's a bad optic. We shouldn't be arguing today. Like, I know someone said to me, Sylvie, look, it's 40 million Americans have been out of work, but we're talking within the context of baseball.
Yeah.
These baseball players aren't going to lose their jobs today. And we're talking about with what they've signed up for. And, you know, our buddy Kevin said, isn't there the force majeure clause? But that's only if the sport goes away. That's not if they play with a pandemic.
Right. But that's, unfortunately, they can invoke that rule and just close up shop for the year and then nobody gets paid.
So let me flip it to you then, because you questioned me because I believe the sport will take a huge hit, especially where it is already. If it would come out that baseball is not playing, not because of the health risk, but because of it is cheaper for them and it will cost them less to just close up shop and start anew next year. You don't believe that will hurt the sport in a great way?
No, a short-term blip. 5 years from now, you'll be back to being business as usual. I mean, you've had a series of lockouts and, you know, work stoppages. And over the course of time, you know, a lot of those senses get dulled. So you may, you know, for a little bit, there may be some uproar. But I asked the guys at the last break. I said, Abdallah goes to Bears games, don't you, Adam? Like, you go to all the Bears games.
Yes, I do. I go to most of them.
Okay. So, like,
third down noise.
How many times have the Bears been in the postseason in the last 10 years?
Twice.
Okay. Wow, that's a 20% postseason percentage. How many times are those seats completely empty?
Never.
That's my point. So even when
it could be negative 30 outside, those people are still there.
But Waddle, they're playing.
I get it. My point is that the owners are sticking it to you, even though the product on the field isn't worth you paying not only the price you're paying, but 10% higher than the price you were paying last
year. You're telling me in an age where we're tuning in on a Sunday when the weather is nice to watch one retired football player, one active football player, one and two golfers play together in a rainstorm, and it could draw 6 million people because we're thirsting so badly for live sports. And in a time where we need our sports, where we can't go out, we can't go to vacation like we once did, we can't go to restaurants, but we may be able to get sports back, even if we can't go to the games. And if they give you the big F you, they look to you and they go, F you.
Like,
we're
Lance
not coming
Armstrong?
Back. You're telling me a sport that is already losing the average age, it gets older every year and it loses a bigger population that watches it, that if it goes away over a financial thing, that won't do it harm in a 5 year, like for the big picture?
5 years from now?
Yes.
No, I don't. I don't.
Yeah, I think it would be very hard for me to ever come back to that sport. It would be very, very hard.
Have been a fan of the Chicago Cubs your entire life.
But they were always there for me. There was always sunshine and Ivy and you know, Bobby Mercer and Dave Kingman and Bill Buckner.
Right. You think Yankees fans aren't going to go to Yankee Stadium? You think Red Sox fans aren't going to go to Fenway?
I'm just telling you, the sport, they have been making money in a lot of great ways.
Yeah.
But the sport, and that's why I don't think they should be crying so poor to begin with, but the sport has been hurting to begin with in popularity. And if the NHL comes back and the NBA comes back and the NFL plays its full season and baseball, the sport that lost the World Series in 1994, will go away over this, you know, the only way it came back before, and we're going to see the documentary, is because they inflated their players.
So there'll be something else 3 years from now. I can't tell you what it is, but something will get it back on track. Because
I'd say screw them. I'd give them the finger back.
But there's 309,999,000 other people in this country, and I'm not so sure they would act the same way.
Yeah, do you know what the season ticket waiting list is like? You think that's going to dry up if the Cubs don't play for a year?
Not.
Come on.
Listen, and the other issue, too, is this. Fans already, they already villainize the owners because they're greedy billionaires, okay? That's like kind of the mantra, which I don't think it's unfair. I don't think they're monsters, but I do think that there is an exceptional level of greed that is involved. They're good business people. That's why they're billionaires.
Yeah. I don't fault them for being billionaires.
No, my point is there's already a built-in dislike of them. If now the season is over or is not going to happen because players who are making again, I'm just giving you the perspective of fans who are already littering your timeline on Twitter that are pissed at players. I'm already pissed off at the owners because they're greedy. Now I got to deal with greedy players. I need baseball and I can't get baseball because I've taken a pay cut. I got tens of friends who have all lost their jobs. And these baseball players making $25 million a year are upset that they're only going to make $9 million a year. Are you kidding me? That's how people respond. The people you go, how in the world can a human being look at the situation and side with the owners over the players? I just gave you the example. They've already villainized the owners.
We have open lines for you at 312-332-3776. Do you believe baseball would be in the same place in 5 years from now if they wouldn't come back over financial reasons? And whose side are you on? Plus, a big announcement in the NHL today, and it involves the Blackhawks, and it could involve our city. That in 2 short minutes.